And Radio Derb is on the air once again. That was one of Haydn's Derbyshire marches, and this is John Derbyshire here, your genial host for a half hour of mulling over the follies of the world, as they have manifested themselves during the past 7 days. I have a bigger than usual catalogue of follies this week, so let's get to it. So, what the heck happened with the polling there in New Hampshire? The polls and the pundits all had Hillary Clinton down for the count. Some polls had her losing to Obama by double-digit percentages. In the event, she beat Obama by 3 points. The analysts tell us that A lot more women came out to vote than the pollsters predicted, and B, many independents went from Obama to McCain. In the grand scheme of things, Hillary's win is a plus. If the universe must contain Democrats, a 60s radical like Hillary is preferable to an 80s radical like Obama, as a stomach ache is preferable to appendicitis, or as a descaling and polishing is preferable to root canal work, or as crabgrass is preferable to poison ivy, or as a dog bite is preferable to a shark bite, or as George W. Bush was preferable to John McCain in 2000. Well, you get my drift. There were also a lot of quiet, private smiles on the faces of old cynics like me, who detest the pretentious, preacherish, content-free uplift that passes for political rhetoric with far too many Americans. Someone once said that democracy is a big, brightly painted gas balloon that floats majestically up into the sky. The population gazes in wonder at the spectacle, while politicians go around picking their pockets. Well, Obama's gas balloon just sprang a leak, and that's fun to see. Not that Hillary doesn't schlep a couple of tanks of helium with her on the campaign trail too. It's still early days though, and I guess we'll be seeing more of Barack Obama and hearing more of his discount store sermons on the Mount. 2008 is going to be a very long year. On the Republican side in New Hampshire, there was another comeback kid, our old pal John McAmnesty. Republicans don't go for the gassy stuff quite so much as Democrats do. We prefer our sentences to have subjects, main verbs, objects, and meaning. There you see the advantage of high school Latin classes. The other advantage is that you know quotes like Spes adita suscitat iras, which is what Virgil tells us about the Trojan troops when they saw Aeneas give the signal for battle. Increase of hope inflamed their passion, which I guess applies to the McCainiacs after New Hampshire. Mike Huckabee is probably more in the frame of mind of Juno later on in Book 10 of the Aeneid, when she asks the ruler of heaven, who is also her husband, and as a matter of fact also her brother, quod ut o potius formidinae falsa luda et in melius tua qui potes orsa reflectas, which in a loose translation means, since you're so almighty powerful, God, I wish you'd turn this thing around for me. Well, well, the caravan moves on. I shall take such small satisfaction as I can from voting for Ron Paul 3 weeks from now. Nobody else has been saying the thing that we all really know, which is that the federal government tries to do far too much, both at home and abroad, and does practically all of it very, very badly. Oh, all right. I guess Fred Thompson's come pretty close. I'll settle for a Fred Ron ticket if I can't get Ron Fred. Fat chance either way, actually. But what's right is right, and as the socialist darkness descends on our land and careerist bureaucrats gnaw away at our liberties, the dwindling few voices speaking up for limited government and constitutional restraint need support. Well, they've got mine. News here from the world of science. Astronomers over in Finland have found the biggest black hole in the universe.
It's the biggest asbestos in the world.
Thank you, Gracie. This thing weighs in at 18 billion times the mass of our sun. I mean, the local star, not Danny Derbyshire. Although at the rate Danny's growing, he'll catch up to the thing pretty soon. Anyway, there's this humongous black hole sitting there at the centre of a quasar 3.5 billion light years away. It's a very interesting object. It has another black hole orbiting round it, just in case you were worried it might be lonely out there. Did I tell you the formal astronomical name of this object? I didn't? Well then, I shall. Here you go. It's named OJ-287. That's OJ-287. And it's the biggest... Well, never mind.
It's the biggest asbestos in the world. The biggest asbestos in the world.
Words are my business, the way that blocked drains are a plumber's business. So I'm always a sucker for word news. Well, here's an item in that line from Down Under. Australia's Macquarie Dictionary has a public contest going to select the word of the year for 2007. They've put up a list of 85 words you can vote for. I must say, I thought the list as a whole was a bit lame. Take tanorexia, for example. Tanorexia. That's the obsessive desire to have tanned skin. Didn't skin tanning sort of kick the fashion bucket back around 1980, when George Hamilton got his first diagnosis of melanoma? Aren't we all supposed to be pale and interesting nowadays? I guess fashion news takes a long time to seep through to Australia. And then there's kippers. Kippers, which are adult children who fail to leave home. It's actually an acronym from Kids in Parents' Pockets Eroding Retirement Savings. Kippers. Floordrobe isn't bad. Floordrobe, that's the use of your bedroom floor as a wardrobe, a phenomenon all too familiar to parents of teenage kids, which is to say, of proto-kippers. How about pod slurping? Pod slurping, the practice of downloading large quantities of data to an MP3 player from a computer. Yeah, it's not bad. Pod slurping. Manscaping. Male grooming procedures involving the removal of body hair. Do guys really do that? Boy, I'm out of touch. Actually, anybody can think up stuff like this. 5 minutes thought here at the Radio Derb console brought forth a couple of neologisms, which I will share with you. Number one, Huckabean. Huckabean. That's a presidential candidate who gets one moment of glory in an early small state primary, but whom everyone has forgotten about 3 months later. He's a Huckabean. And then, how about this one? McCain drain. That's the phenomenon of independent and conservative voters fleeing away from a candidate whom they had quite rightly regarded as a war hero, when they discover that all his policies on domestic issues are 3 points to the left of Noam Chomsky. A McCain drain. Well, it's as good as anything on the stupid Australian list. That's a little number I picked up off the internet. The words, as I am sure my learned and multicultural listeners recognised, are in the Zulu language of South Africa. A translation goes something like this. My machine gun, please bring my machine gun. Although I am told that there's a salacious subtext to those lyrics. Be that as it may, Umshiniwam is the theme song of South African politician Jacob Zuma, who has just been elected president of the African National Congress, South Africa's largest political party. I should emphasise that Mr. Zuma has been elected president of the party, not president of the country. South Africa already has a president, Mr. Thabo Mbeki. Mr. Mbeki's party, as it happens, is also the African National Congress, which means it's a bit of a humiliation for him that Mr. Zuma has snatched the leadership of the party. Mr. Mbeki has to step down no later than 2009 under South Africa's constitution, so Mr. Zuma is well placed to be the country's next president. As well as being very fond of his machine gun, Mr. Zuma is also fond of the ladies. He has 4 official wives, some larger number of mistresses, and 18 acknowledged children. Last year he was up in court on a rape charge, though he got away with only a reprimand from the judge. The year before that he was sacked from the government for corruption, and in fact there are now new corruption charges against him being investigated. Well, you get the picture here. I'd say Mr. Zuma is a shoo-in for the presidency, and in fact is a pretty good bet to declare himself president for life, like his pal Robert Mugabe next door in Zimbabwe. So we'll be seeing a lot of Mr. Zuma in future. Might as well start practicing his song. Ready to give it a try? Here we go. Aule kum shimiwam we tabo. Aule kum shimiwam evo. I don't know. It just doesn't sound the same when I sing it. 3 United States warships were buzzed by 5 Iranian speedboats in the Strait of Hormuz last Sunday. The US vessels didn't blow the Iranians out of the water, to Ralph Peters' great disgust, but at least our sailors didn't bend over and squeal like pigs, as those British sailors did last spring. I'm not going to second-guess the US commanders here, but I do hope they have clear instructions that if unauthorised small craft come within some well-defined distance, they're free to open fire. I don't want to see another USS Cole. Our president is on a tour of the Middle East. He stopped off in Israel to tell the Israelis they should give up their settlements in the West Bank, and to tell the Arabs that they should stop shooting rockets at random into Israeli towns. As if the two things were equivalent. Neither party, of course, has any intention of doing the thing requested. The so-called Palestinian authorities, in fact, have no influence at all over the people firing the rockets, so they couldn't fall in with our president's wishes, even if they wanted to, which they don't particularly. I have in my possession a copy of the London Sunday Times for the day I was born, back in 1945. The lead headline says, "Crisis in the Levant," that being what they called the Middle East back then. I confidently expect that when I finally shuffle off this mortal coil, sometime in October 2026, according to an actuary friend, the newspapers, if there still are any newspapers, which is looking pretty doubtful, the newspapers will still be carrying headlines saying, "Crisis in the Middle East." It's just a permanent feature of the universe, like hurricanes or solar flares. Back in the middle of the Peloponnesian War, there was a peace treaty called the Peace of Nicaeus that was supposed to guarantee 50 years of peace between Athens and Sparta. The peace only lasted 6 years, and it wasn't even that peaceful for 6 years. Why not? Because while both sides were temporarily exhausted, that's why they agreed on a treaty, neither side felt itself truly defeated, and both used the peace to recruit allies and build up strength. Conflicts don't end truly until someone's been defeated and knows it. The Arabs have never defeated Israel. On the other hand, the Arabs have never felt themselves defeated. And so the wretched business rumbles on. I suppose some unforeseen development will tip the balance, one way or the other, one day. But since that doesn't look likely to happen in my lifetime, I see no point in bothering about it. You know those twiddly new light bulbs? The ones that are basically teeny little fluorescent strip lights twisted round into a helix shape. You know the things? The ones that none of your light fixture covers really fits over. The ones that don't respond to dimmer switches. The ones that flicker and emit irritating low buzzing sounds. The ones that make all your indoor photographs come out with a greenish tinge. The ones that contain mercury so that disposing of any quantity of them is a hazard to the environment. Those ones. Well, Congress and the President just made them compulsory. Yes, the new energy bill sets efficiency standards for light bulbs that the traditional incandescent bulbs can't meet. So you'll be using the new ones, whether you want to or not. And this shining city on a hill will become a flickering, buzzing, ill-fitting, non-dimmable, green-tinted city on a hill. It's getting to be kind of traditional for energy bills to deprive us of familiar conveniences. Remember the 1992 energy bill? The one that mandated toilets that have tanks holding no more than 1.6 gallons in order to save water? Except that you have to flush the darn thing 3 times to get the job done. In fact, all that did was to create a flourishing black market in contraband 3-gallon tanks. I expect the new bill will create a similar market in contraband incandescent light bulbs imported from the Third World. They'll probably be unsafe, liable to short circuit and start a fire, or to explode in your face, embedding splinters of hot glass in your eyeballs. But hey, you wouldn't want to stand in the way of progress, would you? Here it is, the $2,500 car. That was the headline I saw on Drudge Report the other day. Well, I thought that looks interesting, so I clicked on the link. I got a message from Times Online saying, "This website is exceptionally busy and could not fulfil your request. Please try later." Now, if you ask me, that's a leading indicator all by itself. I mean, there are enough people interested in a $2,500 car to lock up the website? Oh boy. Well, I finally got through to the item. It's a car called the Nano, built by an Indian firm, name of Tata, over there in India. The Nano is 10 feet long, it seats 4 in comfort, says the promotional literature, without telling us whether that's 4 Indians or 4 residents of Biloxi, Mississippi, which I should think is something you'd actually want to know. The Nano gets 65 miles to the gallon, or 45 miles to a pound of cow dung. If you should die while owning a Nano, it's pre-programmed to drive itself right up onto your funeral pyre. Yours for 100,000 rupees. That's 2,500 of today's dollars, or 3,500 of next week's, and so on. So you'd better get your order in. The issue of birthright citizenship has been in the news. That's the rule that says that anyone born in the USA is automatically a citizen. The rule is based on the 14th Amendment, which says, quote, "All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States." Now, there's a body of legal opinion which says that the words "subject to the jurisdiction thereof" are open to legislative interpretation, so that Congress could declare that, for example, tourists, or, say, illegal immigrants, are not so subject, and therefore any children they have on our territory are not US citizens. Certainly the current interpretation, which makes absolutely anyone a citizen if he's born here, has created some unwelcome phenomena. There's the matter of obstetric tourism, for instance. It's an entire business in South Korea, with open advertisements in the newspapers urging Korean moms-to-be to take a trip to the USA, with a delivery and US citizenship for the baby included. Then there's the fuss over deporting illegal immigrants whose children are citizens by virtue of having been born here. It's hard to see why anyone would support this current interpretation. What would be wrong with saying, if you have not settled here lawfully, your children will not get automatic citizenship? What would be wrong with that? Why would anybody object to it? In fact, the rest of the world has trended that way. Countries like New Zealand and Ireland that used to have birthright citizenship have recently abolished it because of the abuses. So far, those countries have not collapsed in anarchy and violence. Not that I've heard, anyway. Well, as I said, birthright citizenship has been in the news. Mike Huckabee was reported earlier this week as supporting the end of birthright citizenship, though he seemed to think that a constitutional amendment was required. Then Huckabee said no, he thought birthright citizenship was just fine. And then Ron Paul put out a TV commercial, clearly and frankly calling for an end to birthright citizenship. All the liberal muckety-mucks started falling around swooning at the horror of this, and people had to run to get smelling salts for them. It's a well-known fact, of course, that if the US government were to do anything to suggest that foreigners should be treated in any way differently from US citizens, then there would soon be plagues of frogs and locusts, and the rivers would run with blood, and the sun would explode. It's a pretty good rule of economics that if something is handed out free of charge, to pretty much anyone who wants it. It must be something that the people doing the handing out regard as of little value or importance. Which is a very sad comment on the state of American patriotism today. New Jersey has apologized for slavery. The State Assembly and the Senate both voted through a resolution expressing, quote, profound regret for their role in the practice. New Jersey actually banned slavery back in 1846. 15 years later, 70,000 young men from New Jersey went off to fight for the Union in a war that ended slavery in the USA for good. Nearly 6,000 of those young men died in that war. You'd think that would have purged the stain, wouldn't you? Since New Jersey currently has no significant problems needing the legislature's attention, though, they have plenty of time on their hands for gestures like this. Can anyone in Trenton spell the phrase cheap grace? A little local news here. Out here on Long Island, a homeowner was convicted of manslaughter for shooting a young man in his driveway. The young man had shown up with some friends who believed, wrongly as it turned out, that the homeowner's son had made rape threats to a sister of the young man's friend. The young man showed up with his buddies. There was a shouting match in the homeowner's driveway, and the homeowner produced a handgun and shot the young man in the head. Oh, did I mention that the homeowner was black and the young man white? Anyway, this homeowner got the manslaughter conviction and he is now free while he awaits sentencing in February. Naturally, him being black, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson and all the rest of the race hustlers are out in force protesting in the homeowner's defence. This puts your correspondent in an awkward position. I don't really ever want to find myself on the same side of anything as Al and Jesse. And yet, I have to admit, when it comes to dealing with unwanted intruders on your property, I'm something of an absolutist. If you ask the intruders to leave and they don't, I think shooting should be on your list of options. I find, in fact, that many of my neighbours, who are just as Al and Jesse phobic as I am, take the same line. There are some particular circumstances in this case that blur the issue a bit. The homeowner's gun was not registered, as it's supposed to be in this county. He shot the young guy in the head, when he could have just winged him, which is what I would have done. And of course the whole sorry race business further muddies the waters. Still, either we have the right to defend our property or we don't. If we do, I don't think courts should be too persnickety about second-guessing our reactions to perceived threats. Put it this way, I definitely want to be able to shoot intruders with my registered guns if I feel that my family is threatened. In fact, I shall do so and take my chances with the courts. As that saying goes, better to be tried by 12 than carried by 6. The homeowner in this case is looking at a possible 5 to 15 years. Personally, I'd fine him $500 for the unregistered weapon and then let him go. That would please Al and Jesse, and that would be a shame, but it'd be the right sentence nonetheless. And that's it for this week, ladies and gents. Thank you once again for listening. There'll be more madness, sadness, and badness from Radio Derb next week. Until then, I hope you will all try to keep smiling, keep your peckers up, and don't take any wooden nickels, especially from presidential candidates.